Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to the Football Ramble Mailbag. League titles, statues, and collective nouns are the order of the day. It's Saturday, 30th of March. I'm Luke Moore.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Vidushan Hantharaja.
Doesn't sound the same, does it, me doing that? It should be Marcus's job, but he's not here today. He's having a well-earned break, so it is me hosting today's and this week's mailbag. Before we get into it with Jim and Vish, if you want to get involved with the mailbag, you can tweet us on X, as it's currently known, at Football Ramble. Message us on Instagram at Football Ramble as well. And, of course, you can email the show if you're old school, and it's show@footballramble.com. But if you really want to be genuinely considered, you must become a patron at patreon.com/footballramble. I'm only joking. We have a mix across the correspondence options, but by far our favourite are our brothers and sisters over at Patreon. Yes, that's patreon.com/footballramble. For just $5 a month, you get access to the Discord, you get ad-free rambles, you get loads of other stuff as well. Check that out when you get a moment. Okay. Vish and Jim, how are you? Doing okay?
Pretty good.
Very
can't
well.
Can't complain.
Yeah, Easter Saturday. Egg sick yet? Egg bound yet?
Are you allowed to eat the eggs on Saturday, or do you have to wait till Sunday, like Christmas?
You do what you want. I've been picking them up from the local Sainsbury's for weeks, mate.
Tell you what, I'll be rooting around there on Monday evening.
Yeah, good idea, yeah, actually.
For the knockoff ones.
Yeah, good idea. Although I've noticed in my part of London, invariably they tend to run out before Easter.
Right.
Like I've been to shops before looking to get some for family members a couple of days before Easter and they've been out.
Do people run around last minute to buy Easter eggs?
It's an Easter egg hunt,
isn't
it? I
think so, absolutely.
The hunt's not the
hunt. But of all the, you know, the sort of holidays like this, it's the one you can half-ass the most.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's based around for a four-day weekend, right? The whole point is doing either as little as you want or as much as you want that involves as little responsibility as you want. That's how I approach it.
That's every weekend for you. I feel duty bound to point out, actually, Jim, that it is actually more about our Lord and Saviour Jesus Christ dying on the cross for our sins and the egg representing new life as he's resurrected.
Why do we paint the eggs?
But we're doing... I haven't got all the answers, Vish.
Right, fine.
But I'm hoping you've got the answer to this one. It's from Friend of the Ramble, Rick. So there you go, Rick, straight at the top of the bill as Friend of the Ramble, a.k.a. Patreon subscriber. That shows you what you can get if you sign up to Patreon. For which manager, asks Rick, would it be the biggest achievement to win the league this season? Would it be Pep to make it 4 in a row? Would it be Klopp with all the injuries the club's had and the fact that he's moving on? Or Mikel Arteta bringing it back to Arsenal 20 years since the last one in 2004. What do we think, chaps? Jim, I'll come to you first. What's your take?
So, interestingly, the way the question is phrased is interesting in itself, because actually, whoever wins the league, it is a significant achievement for any of them.
It's great,
because
isn't it?
If we sort of do it methodically, four in a row has never been done. So, yep. Regardless of you know, everything that is said about City and the asterisks and whatnot, no one's ever managed to do it before. And you can't take away maybe you can take away, but that's an incredible sporting achievement. You know, they are at the moment on for a double treble, which is astonishing and would be completely unprecedented.
I don't think anyone's done it four in a row in the history of English football, not just the Premier League.
Well, there you go.
So it's a big achievement. And that's what I like so much about this Premier League title race, Vish, is just the idea that whoever wins it, it's a pretty good story. It's a parting gift for Klopp. It's a four in a row unprecedented achievement for Guardiola, or it's a culmination of all the amazing work that Mikel Arteta's done. As Arsenal going back to the top of the tree for the first time in 20 years, they can truly, like, genuinely say they've been able to go some way towards replicating what Arsene Wenger did, who was not, you know, the all-time legend of their club, probably, or certainly one of them. So whoever does it, it won't be Man United, is what I'm saying. Who have done it three in a row, 99, 2000, 2001 did it three in a row. United did it 7, 8 and 9 as well, three in a row. And of course, yeah. Man City are on three in a row at the moment.
So looking at it from Liverpool's point of view, I think that the achievement would come from the amount of injuries they've had. But not just that, it's been the seamless integration of youth in a season where they weren't really expecting to have to do that. And the way Klopp has got those kids settling in and kept that fire in the belly and kept that real sense of momentum from them is amazing. You have to factor in the expectation at the start of the season. I think people were really thinking, get back in the Champions League. And see where you go from there. Obviously, at this point, we didn't know the Klopp was going to leave. I don't think even he knew that. So that's been really impressive. The integration of his signings has been really, really impressive. And all of that suggests the manager at the peak of his powers. For Arsenal, I think for them to win the league, it would have to be probably their best season ever, really, in terms of, probably in terms of the points total that it will take. The culture change that was needed was massive. That's been a gradual thing, but it's happened. They've also had a couple of key players missing. Thomas Partey and Jurrien Timber, you would expect to have been first team players, heavily involved, but both have been unavailable for the most of the season. And Arteta would be the youngest manager ever to win the Premier League him to do that. So for me, I think Arsenal would edge it as an achievement for those reasons, because Arteta's also up against two all-time great managers at the peak of their power, yeah, with all the experience.
And the question was, for which manager?
For which manager? I think for Arteta.
Yeah,
and I agree. Yeah, not least because he was building from a lower base, and I appreciate Klopp did similar. But if we're looking specifically about this season and with the squad improvements that have been made over last summer and even the change in play as well, I think it is Arteta for me. You know, what Jim was saying about the introduction of youth from Klopp, I think that's really impressive. I'd actually say that maybe it's a season later than anticipated, partly due to injuries through Harvey Elliott and Curtis Jones. Kwanzaa in particular this season has been exceptional, especially the volume of games he's had to play at centre-back, considering it wasn't really a problem area that you'd look at Liverpool and think, right, you need cover there, considering the options they had at their disposal. But I think generally from Arteta's perspective, the, you know, just the emotion around the club at various points over the last 5 years, I think the way that he's had to turn over players, you know, getting rid of someone like Aubameyang, who was quite an influential presence in that dressing room for bad reasons by the end of it. And especially having him as club captain, I think the way they did that, considering, and I always go back to this, and I think it's worth going back to, considering how things ended with Aubameyang when that big song and dance about whether he'd sign a new contract, and they gave it the big I am. You know, I think it was an hour before the announcement where there was a live stream of a Black Panther mask. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was this whole thing about, like, this is the thing we've been waiting for. This is the guy we're going to pin everything on. And it, in another situation, or rather in another timeline, that tanks the club for a further 2-3 years, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And the fact that it didn't, and that they've come through, and maybe actually they got away with a couple of big signings in that they missed out on Vlahovic, they missed out on Mudryk, and that allowed them to spend money elsewhere in areas that you know, have, you know, not just Declan Rice, but Zinchenko, Jesus, and maybe a couple of others as well. But
probably allowed them to give big new deals to tip players as well.
Yeah, also, yeah, also something that some people don't really consider. So I think for that reason, Arteta, for me, would be the bigger achievement for him.
I think it shows the joined up thinking at the club as well, in that the top targets in that window were Mudryk and Caicedo, and they ended up with Trossard and Jorginho, who have both been brilliant. So there was clearly a list. It's thought out and considered, and they've executed it really well. I think on Liverpool, what's really interesting about their squad balance is it's tempting to think, actually, well, you know, they've won the league before fairly recently, so that puts them in good stead. But actually, there's only 10 squad members left. One of those is Kevin Kelleher. Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott were in the title-winning squad, but barely played as well. And then you've got Joel Matip and Andy Robertson, who have been injured for big, big parts of this season. So actually, it is a very, Salah. Very different squad. Of course, Salah as well missed a lot of games. Yeah. Very, very different squad from the one that won the league. So, I mean, yeah, credit goes there too.
Totally. And I think what's the beauty in this question from Rick, which is why we selected at the top of the show, I think, is that it really makes you realise that each manager is in a very different kind of phase.
Yeah.
Like you look at Arteta, out of those three, is really the young buck. You said he'd be the youngest manager to win it. It's an incredible achievement if he doesn't win it. What he's been able to do there and brought the belief back. But belief only takes you so far. The belief needs to blossom into, you know, hardcore trophies, and, you know, they've won the FA Cup and stuff, but that's not the same really these days. Klopp is... I mean, this is a big build-up to me saying that I think I agree with you both about Arteta, but just to give it a bit more context, if Klopp goes away from this season, leaves Liverpool, and he's only won one league title, I think he can consider himself to be fairly hard done by. I think that's quite meagre return domestically, given what he's been able to do, and given how close they've been. It could well be now, hopefully, that we see another new rivalry come through, and it's Arsenal, Man City, perhaps Liverpool, depending on what happens after Klopp goes. But really the defining rivalry at the top of the Premier League for this mini era has been Liverpool-Man City. And I think it feels, on one level, a bit unfair that Liverpool only picked up one title under Klopp. I feel like they, on another day, in another way, they could have picked up a couple, and it would have felt a bit fairer to me if it was a little bit more balanced. But the league table is a league table. And then Pep Guardiola is obviously the best manager in the world, has been for some time, and really is an outlier in everything he does. There's no real... credible these days contender to be a better manager than him in world football.
Yeah.
So they're all at different phases. There's different things to credit all of them. I do think perhaps a little bit more has been made of Liverpool's injuries than is necessary, given that City have also lost keep. I mean, De Bruyne is at a massive... I mean, a lot of people would have said, start of this season, I'm not saying he was the best player in the world, but he's in the conversation, which is really all you can ask for. He missed a massive part of the season. Edison's missed big parts of it as well. They've had other players that have gone out. Really serious injuries, long-term injuries to big players, to every kind of player now. It's just part of football because of the amount of football they play. So I don't want to overstate that too much, but I think for Klopp to be able to do the transition you talked about, the turnover of players and stuff, is a really important way of looking at it. But then you could argue that Guardiola getting the intensity so high that... They could do four in a row is also amazing. One thing we haven't talked about, though, chaps, is the idea of the wage bill. You know, when all of us read the book back in the day, who was it, Simon Cooper, talking about, you know, transfer fees don't really have a big correlation between titles won, but wage bills do. Yeah. The wage bill situation, as far as I understand it, top of the wage bill in the Premier League is Manchester United, apparently. They're not in the conversation, but then also we don't really know, do we? Be careful what we say. We don't really know how much Man City are paying on wages, but Man City are up there second, according to this list I've got in front of me here, which is from around December. Arsenal are third. Liverpool way down in fifth. Liverpool paying less for wages than Chelsea are at the moment. So in terms of wage bill, you could probably or possibly say that it'd be an amazing achievement for Liverpool to do it, no?
Yeah, I think what you said there about the different managers in their, you know, different periods in their career, you can almost extrapolate that to the club situation as well, and like making the most of what you have. Now, with Pep Guardiola, obviously, it's one thing being able to bring those players in. And when you talk about wage bill there, you talk about depth, don't you, really? Because you know your starting 11 is going to be of a certain
or the ability to retain real top players.
Yeah, and that on minimal game time, let's say. Yeah, someone who's going to be happy playing just 20 games a season when they could be playing 40 or 50. Mm. And with Liverpool, and well, I suppose Klopp specifically, it's the idea that he's got them all to buy into what they're doing. Like someone like, if you look at their midfield, basically, it was ultimately thrown together this season because of, you know, the surprising losses of Henderson to a point, but Fabinho as well. Obviously, his form fell off a cliff last season, but he was at one point the defensive midfielder to have.
Also, the sort of the general unavailability of Thiago as well, which is factoring.
Yeah, so a good example, just to, so when Liverpool played Manchester City at home, at time of recording a few weeks ago now, they started with a midfield of Szoboszlai, Endo, and Alexis McAllister.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying that's not something that would have been anticipated.
Mm. No, not at all. Even someone like Endo, who feel like he's grown into the season, maybe about January, people are having a conversation and being like, well, actually, you know, he's an exceptionally good and, you know, top tier defensive midfielder, certainly a screener for that defence, who have had a decent number of injuries. And, that comes from Klopp being able to not just articulate the style of play, but also like what it is to be a Liverpool player. Because, you know, someone like Szoboszlai is really lent into that, I think. You know, there was a couple of Gerrard comparisons there in terms of like, you know, scores bangers, you know, heaves passes, you know, across the field from 50 yards.
He also feels a bit like a scruff of the neck player where he'll try and grab a game.
Exactly, yeah. You kind of, like, I don't know if this was articulated to him directly, but there was clearly a point where he understood that at a club like Liverpool, you can be that player. You know, in the structured world of modern football, Liverpool does seem to have this one, you know, one gap, as it were, where, you know what, if you want to be a bit Roy of the Rovers, like, you can. If there's a 20-minute period that you need someone to grab the game with a scruff in the neck, don't have to rely on Patton. Pick the ball up. And
but you don't think Declan Rice does that for Arsenal? Or De Bruyne does it for Man City?
I don't think De Bruyne's role for
Grealish
City
is one of those kind of players, no?
Not so much for City. De Bruyne is just Kevin De Bruyne, though. Like, the role Kevin De Bruyne plays for Man City is Kevin De Bruyne. When he's replaced by someone, that gap doesn't open up. In fact, it closes. And actually, it's probably more Rodri who takes that mantle. I think with Rice, it's a bit different, because what Rice does is actually incredibly constructive and fits in with how Arsenal are shaped up.
He's had so many dimensions to his game, though, since he, I mean, like...
But he's always had those dimensions.
He has, he's never used them as much.
Yeah.
Well, I actually, you know what? I think we often, when people say that about Declan Rice, it's based on the England iteration of Declan Rice. He was a lot more all-action for West Ham, to be fair to him.
No, but what I used to hear all the time, I interviewed Declan Rice a couple of years ago when he was at West Ham, and we talked quite a lot about how everyone says to him he should be getting more goals. Everyone says to him he strikes the ball so well. Everyone says to him he needs to grow into the role of moving forward.
Yeah.
I don't think he moved forward. He was definitely built to start with as like a holding midfield player. And he's definitely added a lot of dynamism to him where he's all round. Marcus was saying on Thursday that with the exception of Harry Kane, he thinks Declan Rice would be the biggest miss from England.
Oh, without a doubt.
Because he's just irreplaceable.
No one else really does that.
But without getting off the point, let me come back to you, Jim, because the idea that I think we all kind of agree that Mikel Arteta would probably, the answer to the question from Rick is Mikel Arteta. It would be the biggest achievement for him to win the league, given what he's up against, given his relative experience, given where he's come from and brought Arsenal to. But is that not because partly that someone like Pep Guardiola has raised the bar so high, we're judging him by his own high standards, and we're forgetting how consistently amazing that the level he's been able to take that team to?
Yeah, I mean, I think those two things can coexist, though, right? The fact that Guardiola has raised those standards still means that you've got other people having to compete within them, and then set new bars. As I said, sort of at the start of this conversation, it will likely have to be Arsenal's best ever season to win the league this year.
But Man City are the team who are maintaining that level every single year.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But which is why, that, you know, should Arsenal manage to overtake that, I suppose City deserve credit for raising that bar, but whoever comes out on top of the pile comes out on top of the pile.
Look, I think we're all agreed, aren't we, here? I mean, we can move on. I think we've got an Arsenal fan in the studio, so maybe that's part of it. But I think Vish and I are pretty neutral. I'm neutral just because I am neutral. Vish is neutral because he probably doesn't want any of them to win it, given that he's a Manchester United fan. There's been a rivalry with each of those teams over the years.
Fair.
But it's a kind of little brother rivalry now for Man United, isn't it? It's like a really spoilt little brother.
Are we the little brother?
Yeah, you've got all
Leeds
the money.
Or Blackburn to them now.
Yeah, you've got all the toys, but no one wants to play with you.
We're like the little blonde fella from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, Joffrey. You're the Joffrey of the Premier League. So, look, Rick, thanks for your question. We think it's probably Mikel Arteta. I'd be interested to know what everyone else thinks. So do get your comments in and get your questions in for next week as well. Coming up after the break, statues we'd like to see in football. Don't hear that conversation enough. And collective nouns for groups of fans. Prepare to be offended if you're one of those types.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Comes all the way across. Townsend. Oh, one more. My, oh my. My sweet grandma's apple pie.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble. It is the mailbag. It is Easter Saturday. What better way to celebrate Easter than with us answering your questions about football? Vish, you've got the next one.
Yes, I've got one from Goofy Goober 26.
It's good because you want to distinguish between the other 25 of them.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
It's important.
I feel like he's all 25 of them. He just forgot the password.
Yeah, he keeps going back to the well.
He is a goof.
Yeah, he's a goober.
What are you like?
Yeah.
So this is relating to the Harry Kane statue that recently went up at Chingford Station. What player or moment in football would you have immortalised as a statue?
I think you not knowing Sean Connery's dead.
How would you do that as a statue, though?
Sat in your chair with the mic in front of you, but just your face is done up to make you look like a moron.
Yeah.
And but then if my mouth's open, people would just like pretend to like shag my mouth, wouldn't they?
Fish!
But, like, what's the downside to this?
in gold, like Goldfinger. It's a tribute.
Yeah, fair.
You can get those statues that have basically listen to a bit of pre-recorded audio with an app. So maybe we could actually have the footage of you not knowing Sean Connery.
You know what, when I went around the Roman Baths in Bath, it was the audio tour information was done by Bill Bryson.
Oh, nice.
It's quite good.
That is good.
I liked it. Yeah, it's quite sardonic. Yeah.
Sometimes they do the sound effects, don't they?
Yeah.
So you can hear like running water. Yeah,
and it was before Bill Bryson went proper old man bitter as well. So it was actually very kind of sardonic and quite wry. It was good. You might as well go first, Jim.
Yeah, so it's a lot of it is about the location of the statue, isn't it? So I'm tempted.
I think you've got to incorporate the location as well in your answer.
So Diego Maradona outside Peter Shilton's house. It's an old Firmos head, simply cannot get over it. Like Firmos head Shilton.
Shushing him.
I think of the incident, of the Hand of God incident.
But okay, the other round, shushing him.
Yeah, sure. It's shushing him in midair, you edit it.
Why did Diego Maradona call Peter Shilton a Firmos head?
Firmos head is an insult he uses, isn't it? It isn't just Peter Shilton.
Yeah.
I think it means
hothead.
It's hothead, or God knows what it actually means.
Firmos have done really well out of that.
That's
a brand name,
you Thermos. Know what you could do as well, if it's the action of Maradona, putting the ball past him, you could steal Shilton's house keys and put them on top. So when he reaches to get them down, he's basically recreated it.
Photo opportunity as well.
Yeah.
That'd be brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
Similarly, John Terry outside Stringfellows. Yeah. No idea if he ever went in there, but it's the sort of association that I think is right for the man.
In his kit, presumably.
In his kit.
John Terry on his arse on a penalty spot.
I've got one. Michael Jackson at Fulham. That'd look amazing, wouldn't it? Yeah. Re-up it, baby.
Why on earth would you? What association is there? Doesn't matter. Right, just put it
exactly,
in.
Doesn't matter. Now, my one would probably be the action. Probably David Nugent's face and the expression he makes to Jermaine Defoe when he stole that goal against Andorra for England. That is 17 years ago this week.
Wow.
So it's actually March 28th, 2007, the week or two before we started the ramble. It was the third goal against Andorra in the qualification campaign for Euro 2008. A glorious period for the England team. I think we can all agree that qualification period went really well. But one of the very first games, possibly the first game we talked about on the Ramble, official Ramble historian Marcus Spiller will need to confirm that. But our show did start a week or two later. So if it's going to be a Ramble-themed statue outside the studio, what better than David Nugent making that face to Jermaine Defoe? If you watch it back on YouTube, he looks like partly embarrassed, about 10% embarrassed, but 90% I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
Because I never thought I was going to have this.
Yeah.
It was very much, come on, this is business.
Business time.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a, it was also, because he's a Scouser, David Nugent. It was a little bit kind of like cheeky Scouser moment as well. Like, you would have done the same.
Yeah. Right.
But if not that, if the authorities won't accept Nugent's goal line steal, then I will compromise on the statue of Steve McClaren with his umbrella permanently installed on the touchline at Wembley.
Nice.
Yeah, that seems like a, you know, in Margate, where they, I can't remember who did them, I feel really bad about this, but you know, those statues that are only visible at low tide?
Anthony Gormley.
Yeah. That's it, yeah.
Is that at Margate, is it?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Right.
But having that, but with McLaren and the umbrella.
So when England go 2-0 down, it comes out of the ground.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, yeah.
I've often thought, I mean, it's a kind of serious answer. I've often thought that, and this is the last thing he needs, right? I don't think Gary Lineker needs any more attention, to be perfectly honest. But him looking at Bobby Robson and pointing to his head when Gazza is crying, that would make a great statue. Or Gazza drying his eyes with his shirt, with his abs.
Yeah, Gazza with the shirt.
Because I think, like, it was Pete Davis, wasn't it, in All Played Out, in the brilliant book, which then got retitled to One Night in Turin. It's worth reading. About England's experiences in Italy in 1990 World Cup and the fans and all the rest of it. I think it's him who said those tears from Gascoigne basically watered the green shoots of the Premier League.
Yeah.
The authorities for the first time saw the power of that and thought, actually, we've got this all wrong with football. We see football fans as like enemies and stuff, but actually they're marketable, like, they're a product we can exploit, basically, because this game is massive and we need to change how we feel. And Pete Davis, I think it is, I don't want to misquote him, but I think he makes the argument that it was Gascoigne's emotional response and everyone's response to him that made people realise how big the sport could be in this modern era. And that would be, I would never do that because it's quite abstract, but I just think that's quite a nice nod to what Gascoigne actually was able to deliver.
Well, you say that, but a statue doesn't always have to be something that's purely about a moment of celebration. It can be something thought-provoking. Yeah. I think you argue it should be something thought-provoking.
Yogi like, loves scratching his balls.
Well, there is a statue of Zidane headbutting Marco Materazzi.
I think it's been taken down.
It was in the Pompidou Centre in France, and it's now in Doha.
That's annoying.
That's worse than chucking it in a river in a canal in Bristol, isn't it?
Yeah. I also thought Michael Owen outside Wembley, but a life-size version of the bobblehead ones you used to get in the 90s.
Owen's not, I mean, there's probably more out there already.
Yeah, but he didn't have a little bobblehead in the 90s.
Oh, meet you by the bobblehead Michael Owen statue.
The Neville Southall, just like 15 yards away. I actually thought Cantona kicking a Crystal Palace fan.
How are you going to statue that, though?
You can statue anything. You just need the little rod, like holding it up.
That's true.
So he does the kick, yeah. Or the Crystal Palace fan, a statue of the Crystal Palace fan in the dock claiming that he said, "That's an early bath for you, Cantona."
It's the most unbelievable quote ever. It is literally the most unbelievable quote ever.
I also thought maybe a series of statues around the Etihad marking Adebayor's celebration against Arsenal.
That is class.
Yeah.
The track around his footprint.
So you could do it. You know, sometimes...
That's when I carried you, Jesus.
You know, like, sometimes you go to like the NBA store in New York and they'll have the different heights, also hand sizes.
Yeah.
So you can see, so basically you can actually do the route, so you can run it.
How could
the
you
length,
do it?
Yeah.
Adebayor did it in X amount of seconds.
Exactly,
can you
do
it? Yeah.
I think sometimes they do it in like exhibitions about athletics where it's like you can run alongside like someone who does the 60-meter dash.
A good half-time thing.
There's a great Instagram account, I was telling you guys about it, where there was a treadmill at one of these events where you could see how long you could run for marathon pace for. London Marathon pace, or marathon world record pace, and like even like athletes, like
yeah,
other athletes could only do it for like 20 seconds. But anyway, I think the sad reality is that because we're England fans here and there's no chance of England having a statue towards anything until they actually win something, I reckon if England were to be successful this summer, whisper it, I reckon there would be a statue off the back of that for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like when England won the Ashes, everyone got a fucking knighted, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Even Paul Collingwood, who played one game and scored like 27 runs.
He didn't get a knight, he got like an OB or something, right?
He got something like that. What? So,
imagine that. Sir Cobby Mainoo going to the UC.
Yes! So, sincere answer, I think it would be incredibly cool if there was a statue of Andre Iniesta celebrating his World Cup winner.
Danny Yarke.
With the Danny Yarke show.
Yeah.
That's good.
That was a really important moment that I think bonded a lot of Spain, because it was a realisation of a, you know, incredible core of players, and also a bit of their beginnings, and just the link with you know, from the top down with Spain and Spanish football as well.
What a player as well. What lovely. A player.
Jacko has been in touch. It's not the one from the Fulham statue, it's the one from the Discord. He wanted to credit fellow friend of the Ramble, Ben, for this question. And Ben asks, surely the collective noun for Fulham fans should be a Waitrose of Fulham fans. What would other clubs' fans be called as a collective? Newcastle fans would be called a Greggs of Newcastle fans, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
A Greggs of Newcastle. So Greggs, is Greggs based in Newcastle? And it's got a famously massive Greggs,
right?
There's
a really big one there, isn't it? We saw it that time.
So if you go along that theme, you're also about a Palmo of Middlesbrough fans.
Yeah.
The Palmo.
A tattoo.
A tattoo of what? Portsmouth fans.
A tattoo of Newcastle fans. A lot of them got the belly ones, didn't they? Dissonance.
I think a tattoo of Portsmouth fans would work well. You get yourself down there, there's obviously a naval tradition. Moderate criminal element as well. Back in my day, when I was young, and you guys will probably remember this, the only people who had tattoos back then were sailors. And criminals,
yeah.
Now it's everyone. Mm. So a tattoo of Pompey fans, I think, would work quite well.
That is good. Fulham do lend themselves well to this. You can have a portfolio, a landlord,
a hamper,
a camembert. Yeah. They all work. They all work really well for Fulham.
A camembert of Fulham fans. That is absolutely brilliant.
I was trying to think of like something, a boardroom of Arsenal fans.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's generally their kind of...
We've had this conversation before many, many years ago, and I think we settled on a brioche, which still works.
Nice. A yesterday of Man United fans.
Oh, don't do that.
I was thinking a reminiscence. Very like quite that. Poetic,
that's
aren't they?
Good, yeah.
A reminiscence. And of course, an irrelevance of Southampton fans.
Indeed. Yeah. After West Ham beat Arsenal at the Emirates earlier in the season, I got a drive-by tweet from a West Ham fan who just said, smug Arsenal fan. So it's with him in mind that I say a gout of West Ham fan.
I mean, I don't want to take sides here, Jim. You know, I'm obviously the host today, so I've been neutral in all things that I do.
But you slacked me up twice already.
Know, yeah, that's what people expect. That's in the contract. I mean, he's not wrong though, is he? He's not massively wrong. I mean, I've sat opposite
I don't think I'm
you.
That smug.
I've sat opposite you on this show many times when Arsenal had a big win.
And that's reasonable, isn't it?
I've been brought up properly. I would never use the word smug about any of my colleagues or friends. But if other people do, that's for them to say. I couldn't possibly comment in any detail. But I don't think it's inaccurate. It's not the most inaccurate thing I've heard. It wouldn't be an Adonis of Jim Campbell, would it?
Give me a month.
Is that all you need?
Yeah.
You had a glow up, though. You've had a glow up.
You know.
Glow down again.
I'm mid-glow at the moment.
So if you had a glow up to 10, what number are you on now?
I'm probably on about 5 now. So I've got work to go.
Plateauing. Are you glowing?
Yeah, glowing.
Yeah.
a twilight of Jim Campbell
fans. A twilight of Jim Campbell.
I've got one. 115 Man City fans.
Nice. An obstruction was my thought for that.
Oh, yeah.
Obstruction of City
fans.
You've
got all the answers here, Jim. This is very good. I think that's probably... I mean, we can't really wrap this show up without doing a Chelsea one.
A beneficiary.
Yeah, possibly.
Beneficiary. And best I could think of.
I've got one for you.
Go on.
They'll love it. A union of Chelsea fans.
Because
they're famously very left-wing.
Yeah.
Aren't they? Very, very supportive of left-wing political causes. And on that note, that's the way to finish this week's Ramble Mailbag. Thank you for listening to the Football Ramble Mailbag, part of the Acast Creator Network. We're back on Monday with a brand new Ramble straight off the back of that predicted barn burner between... Manchester City and Arsenal. Can't wait for that one. In the meantime, follow us on X, TikTok, YouTube and Instagram at Football Ramble, and follow us on Spotify as well. I can't let it go without saying that I don't want to call them X, but it says here Twitter is now known as X. So get your tweets in on X and keep the Musketeer happy. It's goodbye from Vish.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Jim.
See ya.
It's goodbye from me as well. Goodbye.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.